In the treatment as prevention era, HIV is regarded as a chronic, manageable condition. But learning to manage HIV is more complex than taking a pill a day, as we've heard, and living well requires attention to social and emotional needs that extend beyond clinical management. Recognition of the role of social support networks in supporting health and well-being has increased in recent years, and in April 2019, NAPWHA published their Stigma and Resilience Framework with a strategic priority action to support people living with HIV to build strong, flexible, and sustained social and personal networks to help combat stigma, promote meaningful social engagement, and provide protection from isolation and disengagement. And the research I'm presenting today looks at the role of peer networks in supporting that aim. Broadly, the research I'm presenting explored the lived experience of social support of people recently diagnosed with HIV, identified the networks that support the transition from diagnosis towards self-management and living well, and highlighted the contribution made by peer networks. The research is embedded within a larger study at the School of Public Health at UQ called the HIV Testing to Treatment Trajectory in Queensland Study. 40 people diagnosed with HIV in the last 5 years have taken part in a series of in-depth interviews to explore their experiences of HIV testing, diagnosis, treatment, and beyond. So the study is really about that trajectory, that pivotal time around and following HIV diagnosis. The participants ranged in age from 24 to 74 years. The sample included men, women, and gender diverse people, people born overseas, Indigenous Australians, and people living in all different parts of Queensland. I conducted social support network mapping with a subsample of 10 participants to explore their personal support networks. And during that process, they identified key support people to take part in an interview around their experiences of providing support. So in this presentation, I'm drawing on the perspectives of recently diagnosed people and the peers and peer-led service providers who they recognised as key supports. So I'll just start with an overview of how recently diagnosed people experienced peer support. Peers and peer-led services provided a safety net in a time of crisis of unconditional acceptance and non-judgment. They helped achieve stability for people who were grappling with disruption and uncertainty. Peers who shared meaningful connections and had shared outlooks and provided solidarity were particularly important supports. Peers helped manage health through strategies, information, access to treatment, and role modelling good health. Peers validated the lived experience of HIV, as Chris talked about. They recognise the strength needed to thrive and the wisdom that the experience brings. And finally, peers encouraged growth. They were often educators and mentors who helped empower participants to reach for new horizons. So in terms of what's valuable about peer support, according to recently diagnosed people, support for health behaviours like treatment uptake and adherence was important, but it was underpinned by this broader acceptance, validation, and solidarity, which is a much harder outcome to measure, but nonetheless vital. Recently diagnosed people engage with peer support in diverse ways, both around the time of diagnosis and then as they transition more towards self-management. Early on, formal services like peer navigation and newly diagnosed workshops helped people develop HIV literacy, connect with health services, and find that solidarity of just knowing somebody else was out there. Later on, informal groups and events provided a means to build and expand what were for some quite sparse social support networks. And I can't understate how important it was for participants who really needed friends. But even for those with lots of family and friends, just having a space to be open about HIV was valuable. A lot of peer connection happened online. At least half had connected through the Institute of Many. It was really easily accessible. And all bar one or two of those 40 participants had connected with peers in one or more of these ways, And so it just showed how relevant and how needed peer support was during this transitional time. So how did I connect with peer supporters over the course of the study? So during social support network mapping, I asked participants to name the people who they perceived as pivotal in meeting some aspect of their support needs. In accordance with processes required for ethics approval, I could not approach these support people directly, but rather I allowed participants to approach their supports and invite them to take part in an interview. So I managed to recruit 5 key supports, who then introduced a further 4. And on that picture, the names in black represent recently diagnosed participants who undertook the network mapping, and they nominated key supports who were the ones in red. And the arrows indicate who nominated who. So interestingly, Ryan, who was perceived to be an important support by several people, was actually one of the original participants. So many support people were identified during the social network mapping, but these were the ones who put their hands up to be interviewed about their experiences. Of the 9, 8 were peers living with HIV and 1 was a caseworker at QPP. But interestingly, all of these people were perceived as supporting not one, but many people living with HIV. They were names that came up again and again. So I felt like I tapped into a peer support network that exists in Queensland, and I talked to some of those in it about their experiences. So what did those peer supporters see as the strengths and benefits of peer support networks? The strengths lay in peer support being collective, flexible, and reciprocal. So while support from healthcare providers tends to be delivered one-on-one in the context of a clinical appointment, peer support was often experienced as many supporting many. There were benefits associated with network or community inclusion, like acceptance, solidarity, reassurance of self-worth, and fun. Peer networks delivered flexible support, as Chris and Alison said, through formal and informal modes that bridged the clinical and everyday worlds. Peer support was often spontaneous rather than subject to appointment times or administered as part of a structured protocol or role description. And there were reciprocal benefits to peer support. As we know, peers were rarely just service providers or recipients. By tapping into the network, they reaped the benefits of network inclusion, but they also further strengthened the network to make it a resource that others can tap into. But there were definitely challenges around the provision of peer support for recently diagnosed people living with HIV. So I'll echo a little bit of what the others said. Diverse demographics and social circumstances impacted the support that people needed and the resources and time required to try and meet those needs. People have very different lifestyles and outlooks, and meeting in the middle was challenging. Reaching out to people who would rather remain hidden was complicated, and so that applied to both online and face-to-face interactions where confidentiality is so key. Managing their own personal health and well-being was important. They were drawing on lived experiences to help others, which was amazing but difficult at times, and they needed support in this. As Chris said, funding in Queensland has tended to become more aligned with biomedical rather than social outcomes, yet short intervention models focused on rates of treatment uptake don't really allow for building of social networks that would actually be protective around disengagement, mental health, and isolation. And peer support providers felt undervalued in the context of broader healthcare teams, that their roles weren't recognised, promoted, or remunerated in accordance with the tireless and very effective work that they did. So to summarise, it's really important to remember that meaningful social connection is a pivotal aspect of living well for anybody. And peer networks remain a vital resource for many people living with HIV. One size does not fit all when it comes to peer support, but every mode of peer connection that was available was used. Tapping into peer support offered that validation of lived experience that could not come from healthcare providers or existing personal communities. Support needs change over time, and offering options for people to tap in and out of peer networks if and when they need to is critical. Investing in peer networks will help strengthen them, but that means investing in people. So to finish, in the TASP era, there have been amazing steps forward in rates of viral suppression, but our understanding of what is involved in HIV care has become increasingly skewed towards this biomedical endpoint. And this shifts focus from what peers can do so well, which is, and biomedical technologies can't, which is to help people living with HIV to build strong social networks that are protective against stigma, disengagement, and isolation. So in light of NAPWHA's strategic priority to help people living with HIV build strong, flexible, and sustainable support networks, I have three recommendations arising from this research. First, upscale HIV education in mainstream settings. Peers and peer-led services spend too much time and energy dealing with the fallout of stigma in communities and healthcare settings, and it's unacceptable that this burden continues to lie on the shoulders of people living with HIV. I strongly recommend expanding formal healthcare teams to include peers. We must recognise peers not as peripheral, but integral to HIV care. And in addition to expanding peer navigator programs, we must promote informal peer social groups and online platforms. They help build the network. It's really important to mention that not everyone in our cohort knew about the range of ways they could tap into peer support and peer networks. Nowadays, as clinical services are filled to capacity, it's more important than ever to support the networks that are providing HIV care beyond the continuum. This is how we can support people living with HIV to live well and ensure that the voices of people living with HIV remain central to the HIV response in our country. Thank you.